So we just want to talk about today about the cost of following Jesus. And I want to share with you some stories from around the world about people who've decided that he is worth it. So I want to chat first about things that really aren't worth the effort, so we can just put that into some context. So, you know, if you relate to any of these things, then please give me a cheer as I speak. So I was chatting with someone at work recently about things that really aren't worth the effort. So I'm not much of a football player or a rugby player, but he was telling me that it always feels like cleaning your football kit is just never worth it because you're just going to get it muddy again. Does anyone ever feel like that? Any footballers in here? No, you're all very clean and tidy. That's just him who's gross. That's good to know. Okay, well, the other thing is, so domino rallies. I don't know if you've ever seen on, like, YouTube, these people who spend, like, 5 hours setting up these, like, domino rally things, and then it's over in, like, 3 minutes. And it's like, okay, great. Well, that took a long time. Making your bed. Who are the bed makers in this room? Wave at me. Who never makes their bed? Yes. Who came to Soul Survivor and left their bed messy? Who did that? Woo! Great. Yes, good to know you're here. You're just going to get back in again. I understand. That's fair. Eyebrow shaping. What is the point? It just grows back. Never worth the effort. Camping. Who thinks camping's worth the effort? Yes? There we go. Okay. Robot Wars. I've got a friend who was on Robot Wars recently, and he spent months creating this thing. Is anyone a fan of Robot Wars in here? Does anyone follow it pretty well? There was a robot called Cherub on there like a few months ago. It became like a meme or something. But like they spent months building it with his family only for it to get destroyed. And it was really sad. And I'm just like, that's a lot of effort for 2 minutes worth of destruction on TV. Jogging. Is jogging worth the effort? Who's a jogger in here? Yeah? Who's not a jogger? Yes, my people. Hello. There we go. Low-calorie diets. Not worth the effort. Cakes are much better than low-calorie diets, surely. And my personal favorite that I've come across, a degree in David Beckham studies. That is a thing. I promise you that is true. I'm not making this up. It's something that you can do. Surely 3 years studying that, I'm like, come on, is that really worth the effort? So we've gone through a few things that I'm personally unsure about whether that's all worth the effort. But I just want you in the groups that you're in right now just to spend a few minutes just chatting about things that really are worth the effort. So just with who you're with now, just chat about some things you can think of that are worth the effort. Good friendships, absolutely. That's true. It's true, it's worth making an effort for your friends, absolutely. Anyone else? Yeah, absolutely. So studies, work, exam revision, all that kind of thing. It's a lot of effort, but it is worth it. Ooh, mixed reviews. Anyone else? You're waving at me. Reading is worth the effort. Anyone else? Waiting for takeout. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. The like estimated time arrival from Just Eat, it feels like a lifetime away, but then it comes and it's worth it. It's true. Yes, you again. If anyone didn't hear that, it was brushing your teeth before snogging. I will make no comments on that. Anyone else? Please don't let that be the one we finish on. Someone else. Come on, guys. Okay, we're really going to leave it at that. Okay, so there are a few things that I thought of. So I thought of exam revision, things like surprise parties for someone, stuff like that. Soul Survivor, that's worth the effort. Come on, guys. Recycling's worth the effort. Planning a holiday and traveling can seem like a lot of faff to do it, but it's definitely worth it. And the most recent one for me was driving up the M6 to come here. Ooh, was anyone else on the M6, like on Friday or Saturday? Yes, you know the pain, you know what we went through. It was all like, you know, complete roadworks up until the Lake District, and then it got beautiful. And then even better, we got into God's other promised land, Scotland, and it was beautiful. Yes, it was amazing. Worth it, absolutely worth it. Absolutely worth it. And of course, there's the one that we haven't mentioned, the Sunday school answer. That we've not mentioned. Jesus, absolutely. Jesus is worth the effort. So as you said, so Open Doors, I realised I didn't explain a huge amount of what we do, because this is more about just chatting about, if you know, the cost of following Jesus and thinking about whether Jesus is worth it. But what we do is we support Christians all around the world who have counted up the cost. And for a lot of them, it's very costly. For a lot of Christians, they will be thrown into prison, or they could be killed, or they could lose their jobs or their house or their families just for following Jesus. And, you know, we can kind of think about this, and we kind of think, you know, it's not always easy for us following Jesus. It's not always easy at all. And we can sometimes wonder whether it is always worth the hassle, or it is often worth all like the banter we'd get from like friends or colleagues or whatever. And sometimes it can be easy to wonder if life would be easier if God wasn't a factor in it at all, if we could just do what we wanted. And sometimes we can just doubt, you know, is God really there? Is God really bothered by what's going on in my life? And you know what, if you've ever thought that, you probably know, or you should know anyway, that you're not on your own. You're not the only person who's ever thought that. So, you know, even like people in the Bible thought that. So there was an Old Testament prophet called Habakkuk. So a prophet is basically someone who hears from God and then tells other people what God said to them. And so he was wondering, you know, why he was seeing so much suffering, and why there was so much violence, and why there were so many awful things going on in the world. Has anyone ever wondered that? Yeah. That he was wondering that, and he was asking God whether he was there in it all. People like Job, who saw immense suffering, who was someone who followed God all his life and couldn't understand why all these awful things were happening to him, why he was getting ill, why his family members and loved ones were dying, why all his livelihood, why his business was failing, and why everything was going wrong. He didn't understand it, and he was doubting God. Even the disciples, the ones who walked with Jesus, who knew Jesus, who loved Jesus, wondered why this hero that they thought was going to completely free Israel from the occupation they were living under was crucified and died on a cross in the most humiliating way. Even Joseph. So Joseph had amazing God-given dreams, only to be sold into slavery. He didn't understand why God had let that happen to him. But in all these stories in the Bible, what we see is that God had a much bigger plan. He always has a much bigger plan, a much more long-term plan than we realize. It's always a long-term plan. So let's focus in on Joseph for a minute. So God's plan for him was so much bigger than what Joseph saw at the time. God was actually working in Joseph's life much more for the long term. So he was using everything that happened to him, everything, to prepare him for what was to come, even being sold into slavery, even being falsely accused, and even being thrown into prison. Everything God was using that to set Joseph on a path that would lead him to being prime minister of Egypt. He was teaching him things. He was molding his character and shaping him in a way that couldn't be done in another way. There's a guy called Oswald Chambers, and he's one of my favorite Scottish preachers and teachers. And he wrote this amazing quote. So I absolutely love it. He just says, "God gives us a vision, and then he takes us down to the valley to batter us into the shape of that vision. It is in the valley that so many of us give up and faint. Every God-given vision will become real if we will only have patience. Just think of the enormous amount of free time God has. He is never in a hurry, but we are always in such a frantic hurry. While still in the light of the glory of the vision, we go right out to do things, but the vision is not yet real in us. God has to take us into the valley and put us through fires and floods to batter us into shape until we get to the point where he can trust us with the reality of the vision. Ever since God gave us the vision, he has been at work. He is getting us into the shape of the goal that he has for us. Yet over and over again, we try to escape from the sculptor's hand in an effort to batter ourselves into the shape of our own goal." You know, sometimes in frustration, I find myself saying, "God, I don't get what you're doing right now. I don't understand it." And then sometimes I can almost hear God saying, "Really? You're surprised that your 20-something-year-old brain can't get around what I'm doing? God, who is so much bigger than you, who created you, who is here, who was here infinitely before you and will be here infinitely after you're on this earth? You're surprised that you don't get what I'm doing? Really? God is always doing so much more than we realize. And it means that he's doing so much more through our suffering and our brokenness than we realize as well. There is no part of your life that God is not at work in. Absolutely no part. He is always at work and he is using all things. Joseph continued to trust in God. And he was ready to use his gifts, the gifts that God had given him, the vision God had given him when he had the opportunity. Habakkuk waited for God, for what God was going to do. And the amazing thing that God said to him, that's that, you know, he said, actually, things might all look bad for quite a while. He didn't say, you know what, it's all going to be okay and you don't have to worry and it's all going to be fine. He said, yeah, things are going to look bad. Things are going to look really bad. But you know what? Through all these things, he says, the whole earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of God, as it says in chapter 2. That means through all these things, the whole earth will have the opportunity to come to know me, to be in my family, through all of these things. The disciples, you know, they eventually saw that all these things had to happen to Jesus so that he would rise again and offer the whole world that opportunity. God was working all things together for good from beginning to end. He's always doing that. He's always up to more. Can we wait long enough to see what God is up to? Can we hold on long enough? I love how the Message paraphrases a verse in Micah. So Micah's another Old Testament prophet. I love the Old Testament prophets. I think they're great. But in Micah 7:7, the Message puts it, you know, because Micah's, he's listing all these things, similar to Habakkuk, all these things that are going wrong, and he's not sure what God's doing. And you can just see that he's just in pain and he's just crying out, wondering, what are you doing right now? But in verse 7 of chapter 7, he just says, but me, I'm not giving up. I'm sticking around to see what God will do. I'm waiting for God to make things right. I'm counting on God to listen to me. I want that attitude. Regardless of circumstance or how hard things seem, I want that determination, that just stubbornness to just be like, I don't care what comes my way. I'm just going to wait and see what God does with this. I'm going to wait this out because I know he will hear me and I know he will listen to me because that is who he is. And I know that he can't act against himself because God's very nature is to be faithful, is to go further, to show us his love, to show us how much he wants us in our family. That is his very nature. And so I'm going to count on God to hear me and to listen to me and to make things right. And I'm not going to play down how hard things are sometimes. You know, I know that sometimes all we want to do is give up. You know, I've been there too. I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase to tap out. But it can be a very strong temptation. So I don't know if you know what I mean by this phrase. But I remember when I was at Bible college and a lot of the lads would wrestle because apparently that's what trainee ministers do. And so they would wrestle, and like usually when one of them was in a headlock by the bigger guy and he was going really red in the face and he looked like he was about to pass out, and or like there was another guy who's just had another bigger guy sitting on his neck, and when they were about, just before they were about to pass out, they would tap the ground and then the guy would get off and celebrate his victory. So they would tap out. And sometimes there's a temptation to tap out, to say, you know what, this is too much. This is too much for me. I can't cope with this anymore. I don't know if you've ever seen this study, like anyone who's sort of done like psychology at school or uni or something will probably have come across this, but it's like, you know, when you, the study when you put a chocolate chip cookie in front of a three-year-old and you ask them not to eat it. And if you don't eat it, then you'll get another one in 5 minutes' time. And they did that to see if they could resist that temptation. Some could and others couldn't. And sometimes we have to work it out. We have to say, you know, is it worth it following Jesus? We have to know the cost. We have to know what it could cost us. We have to be aware of what this could lead to, of what saying yes to God could lead to, where he could call us, what he could do in our lives. Is it worth holding out for what we cannot see? And, you know, it's not hard to get distracted by the present. You know, that's what we can see right now. It's probably the most obvious thing to be fixated on what we can see rather than what we can't. You know, Jesus often told stories and he did things in front of his disciples that didn't make much sense to his disciples at the time. Like, I love how often in the Bible it's just like, the disciples didn't understand this. And it's like, okay, good, not just me. And then they like, but they say, you know, but it did make sense, you know, once everything had been fulfilled and once he died on the cross, you know, and then it all made sense. But the thing is, if our eyes are on Jesus, and if our eyes are preoccupied with the person who Jesus is, then we don't need to be distracted by other things. We don't need to be fixated by other things, because if our eyes are on Jesus, then nothing else matters. Then nothing else matters. I remember hearing a quote from someone, I wish I could remember who it was, but they said, those who made the biggest difference in the present, who impacted the world the most in the present, had their eyes fixed on eternity with Jesus. When we are truly trusting that God is who he says he is, when we're truly trusting that what he says is our future, eternity with him, when we're truly trusting that that is true and that that is real, it's so much easier to leave our lives, our pasts, our presents, our futures completely in his hands, the most secure place they could possibly be anyway. Because we realize that, you know, this is what God's in the habit of doing, of transforming the ordinary or the broken into something good, turning water into wine, turning ordinary, turning the dirty situations, the difficult situations into something good, something that can be used for his glory. That's what he does. But our culture, I mean, us, it's hard not to be fixated on the present. But we need to have the courage to leave our work, to leave our fears, to leave our futures in the hands of God, in the hands of Jesus. And knowing that God has it all in hand is the most freeing thing in the world. When we can be free from the pressure of results and the pressure of, you know, I need to achieve this and I need to do this, and we can just be assured that God is with us, that God is on our side, and that God is in control of our lives, in the lives of our families, of our nation, of the whole world. There is nothing outside of his control, nothing outside of his hands. And so we can't tap out early just because we can't see what God's doing right now. And there are so many people around the world who know that as a reality much better than I do, so much better than I do. We hear a lot of really heartbreaking stories of working with a persecuted church. There's amazing stories as well, but there's a lot of stories that really do just break our hearts, just really break our hearts. And I remember hearing a story about a girl called Fatima. You may have heard this story before, but she was from Saudi Arabia. And she'd become a Christian. She was from a Muslim family. And she started blogging, and she started a blog that just shared about her faith, shared about her faith in Jesus. And she ended up getting a lot of threats, a lot of people who threatened to kill her, who said, you know, you are an apostate, that means like a traitor of Islam. And they'd say, if I had you in my hands, I would slaughter you twice. She had the opportunity to tap out. You know, if she was listening to people around her, if people around her was sort of giving her advice, they'd probably say, you should probably stop with this now. You should probably calm down with the Jesus stuff now. But she didn't. She kept going, and she said, you know what, I am unto death a Christian. And she kept going, and she kept going, and she kept blogging, and she kept telling people about Jesus. And people followed her. People wanted to hear what she had to say about Jesus. But then there was one day when she had her laptop open at home, and then she came home to find her brother on it, and she panicked because she knew that her desktop picture was a picture of the cross, and she saw the anger in her brother's eyes, and so she ran out the room, and then she sent a message to some of her followers just saying, I'm in big trouble, please pray for me. And then she eventually went back to the house, and her brother was there waiting for her. And he burnt her back, and he burnt her face, and he cut out her tongue, and he killed her. She had many opportunities to tap out early, to say, you know what, no, this isn't worth it. But she knew that following Jesus was worth everything. She knew that it was the most precious thing of all, and she couldn't renounce him. She couldn't say no. She couldn't say no to Jesus because she knew he was irresistible. She knew that he was so much better than anything that this world could offer her. So in the Bible, it talks about, it does talk about this a lot. And Jesus often warns people that, you know, I'm sending you out in the midst of wolves, as it said in Matthew 10:16. I'm sending you out in the midst of wolves. So if you are a follower of Jesus, you are sent into the world. And to say that you're being sent out in the midst of wolves, there are people who will hate you for following Jesus, who will take real issue with you following Jesus. But he says, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, calling you to be as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. So just with the groups that you were chatting with earlier, so I just want you to kind of chat through what you think it means to be as wise as a serpent and as innocent as a dove, and what that really means. So if we could just take a few minutes to just chat about that. Okay, could we have a few people to feedback what they think? Yeah, absolutely. That's really good. So being like led by the Spirit and being able to hear God's voice and what we should do and what we shouldn't do in certain situations, I think that's really true. That's really true. Anyone else? Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So keeping that kind of purity from things that distract us and stop us from looking at God, I think that's definitely true. Anyone else? Okay, so there's also another statement that is said when we say, you know, in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 verse 12, it says we put up with anything rather than hinder the gospel of Christ. And I think that's one of the keys here. It's being discerning enough to know that as Christians, we have a huge cost to bear. But Jesus is worth it because the gospel is worth it, because we carry the best news in the world. The fact that we all get to be part of God's family, the fact that God lives within us, the fact that God is our friend, that is the best news that we could ever tell anyone, that we could ever give to anyone. And so, you know, we put up with these things and we endure suffering and hardship and awful things because we want the world to know about the love of God, the life-giving gift of love that God has given us. That's what we want. I mean, you know, it's not always easy to live like that. You know, I don't know if you ever see in churches these sort of bold declarations about, you know, living for Jesus, whatever the cost. But I think sometimes you kind of think, well, my declaration would probably look more like, well, today I promise that, you know, if it's a good day, if I've slept well and I've eaten well, that I am willing to be mildly inconvenienced for the sake of Christ. Maybe. Or, God, I promise that I will give you about 10% of my life and of my energy at a time that suits me, as long as I'm well fed and well rested. Sometimes it can feel a little bit more like that. That's probably, if we're honest, a lot of the way our lives play out on a day-to-day basis. But you know, it says, but Jesus says, you know, whoever does not carry their cross. So a cross being an instrument for giving up one's life and follow me cannot be my disciple. So back in your groups for just a short time this time, but just what does carrying your cross mean? What do you think that means? And then I'll stop you after maybe a minute or so. Okay, can anyone tell me what they think it means to carry their cross? Yes, hand over here. Sorry, what was that? Carry your burdens. I'm so sorry, I didn't hear that. Your burdens. Carrying your burdens. Absolutely, carrying the burdens that sort of come with following Jesus and things like that. Absolutely. Is that a hand here? Oh, okay. That's fair. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So it's carrying the fact that Jesus died for us with us. Indeed. Yes, hand over here. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, commitment to your beliefs, like, regardless of what that means. You know, I mean, it's hard when you're in, like, school or when you're in work or whatever to be true to that. Has anyone ever felt, like, isolated for being a Christian at school? Anyone? Yeah, or in work or whenever. Absolutely. Loads of us have. It is isolating to know Jesus sometimes. It can feel really isolating. But moving on now, you know, we know that faith has a cost. And for so many people around the world, they know that as well. I had the opportunity to go to Iraq last September. And I was hanging out with this guy who's amazing, amazing man. So he was a Muslim and he became a Christian through a dream of Jesus. That's not that uncommon. So that happens to a lot of people there. But what's really interesting about him is that he had a dream while he was in an Al-Qaeda training camp. And then he had a dream of Jesus and decided to follow him from that day on. And that's meant that lots of people have been hunting him down ever since. He's had to run away from many different countries and he's been kidnapped and tortured. And he's a formidable, formidable looking guy. So I can't imagine what the people who are after him must have looked like. But he's an amazing guy. And he told me, you know what, I have lost 70 members of friends of family over the last 10 years. 70. You know what? No, I don't think anyone is strong enough. I don't care how holy or spiritual you are. That doesn't leave anyone unscathed, losing 70 people like that. But you know what that tells me? The fact that he has seen that, but he is still carrying on with Jesus. He still wants to know Jesus more. His life was great before he left Islam. His life was fine. He belonged to a good family. They were high up in the sort of ranks there and things like that. You know, they had a good home, good jobs, all that kind of thing. And he left all of that because he knew that Jesus was worth more. He knew that Jesus was worth more. I remember hearing an amazing story about a girl called Susan in Uganda. And now Susan was also from a Muslim family. And when she was 13, there was this guy who came to her school and he did an assembly about a man called Jesus. And from that day on, she decided, I want to become a Christian. I want to follow Jesus. And her family really weren't happy about this. And her father in particular was very, very angry. And he would beat her and he would tell her that she had to stop going to church. And she said, no, I'm not doing that. But then one day, he dragged Susan and he threw her in this room and he said, sit on that mat. And so Susan sat on the mat and he said, do not move there until you renounce Jesus. And then he turned around and he closed the door and he locked the door. And for 3 months, Susan sat on that mat in that room. And neighbors started to wonder where she'd gone. And they asked her brother, they said, you know, where is Susan? We've not seen her in months. And then her brother had the courage to say, actually, Susan has been locked in this room by her father because she's a Christian. And so the neighbors, they called the police and eventually they got her out of there. And when the police found her, she was so skinny. She was just weighing just so little. And her legs had kind of contorted to the way that she was sitting on that mat. The only way that she'd survived was her brother slipping water and like fried banana under the door. And she was just still sat on that mat. And they took her to hospital and they started to rehabilitate her. And they said, Susan, why did you not try to escape? More to the point, why did you not even get off that mat in the whole time you were there? And she said, my father said that if I were even to get off that mat, I'd be renouncing Jesus. And I cannot do that because he is the most important thing in the world to me. And I cannot renounce him. I will not renounce him. When Susan was found and released, you know, she was severely malnourished, as we said. And she's 17 now, and she's just undergone 12 hours of surgery on her hip, so she's still suffering from the pains that she had when that happened. But since her release 5 years ago, you know, she's had so many operations and a lot of support to enable her to walk and move around. But we're still working alongside her and we're still seeing her grow from strength to strength in her faith. You would think that would put her off, but it didn't. Because she knows that Jesus is worth it. She knows that he is worth everything. Susan and Fatima and all these other people, they remind me that Jesus is worth it. You know, as at Open Doors, we put together what we call a world watch list. So that's basically a list of all the 50 countries around the world where it's most dangerous to be a Christian. And they put this list together. And what I see when I look at this list, firstly, I'm like, there is still a church in all of those countries? That's mad. You know, and it just reminds me that even when people try and do whatever it takes to stamp out the church and to stamp out the gospel, it doesn't succeed because God is too powerful for that. God's plans for his church are too powerful for that. The fact that even in places like North Korea, that's been, you know, the worst place to be a Christian in 15 years in a row, where if you're found to be a Christian or found with the Bible, not only you'll be thrown in prison, but your parents will be thrown in prison, your children will be thrown in prison, and not just prison, but like a full-on concentration camp. But you know what's happening in North Korea? People are coming to know Jesus because they're hearing Christians singing hymns in the toilets of the concentration camps. And you know why they're doing that? Because that's the most smelly place in the whole of the camp, and not even the guards will go in there. So people are hearing the gospel for the first time in these places. God is always at work, even in the darkest, darkest of places. And I'm always reminded that God is so much more powerful. That no matter what anyone tries to do, God is still powerful. And God is still worth it. I remember chatting to a Syrian lady when I was in Lebanon last year. And she was also a Muslim background believer. And she said, you know, she'd had to leave her home in Syria. You know, her little boy had been hurt as they were leaving. And she said, but you know what, there's nothing in my life that I don't thank God for, because if I'd have never have got to this place, then maybe I'd have never have come to know Jesus. It was the church in Lebanon that reached out to me, that cared for my children, that fed us. And it was that supernatural love that showed me the supernatural love of Jesus. And that is the most precious thing of all to me. She said, I'm thankful for everything that has happened in my life. God always has a plan. You know, persecution and hardships happening to Christians, I honestly believe that that was part of the reason why the gospel spread past Jerusalem, even in Acts. Like we see in Acts 6, all the believers, they're huddled in Jerusalem and they're having an amazing time, and then suddenly persecution comes and they're spread out. And they have, in Acts 7 and 8, they have to go to other places. And we see people in Samaria sharing the word of Jesus, and we see people going even further than that, and we see the gospel spreading from that. God always has a plan, even in suffering. But I think sometimes we can hear this kind of thing. We can hear, you know, these stories. Okay, these people believe that Jesus is worth it. I'm not nearly as strong as that. You know, I don't know about you, but I remember when I was at school and people would be like, oh, are you a Christian? And sometimes be like, yeah, sort of. And you wouldn't want to, you know, totally share everything because it's awkward and it's weird and you kind of feel bad because you're not as bold as these people. But you know what? It doesn't come from us. It doesn't just come from us. I remember hearing a story of a lady in Iran, and she was starting to see a lot of her friends being hauled off into jail. And she was saying, God, please don't let me go to jail. Please don't let me be tortured for knowing you, because I don't think I would have the strength to withstand. I think I would renounce you. I think I would deny you. And more of her friends are hauled off. And the police and the authorities kept coming from more people that she knew. And then eventually they came for her. And she was thrown in prison. And she was beaten. And she was tortured. And they put a piece of paper in front of her as a declaration that she was renouncing her faith and converting back to Islam. And they said, sign this piece of paper. And then all of a sudden she felt something rise up within her. She felt the power of God empower her to say the most amazing words. She said, my God is the King of kings and the Lord of lords. He is the creator of all things, and I cannot forget him, because he did not forget me. And I will not sign your piece of paper. It's not about what we try and muster up within ourselves. It's not about us trying to be brave and trying to be good. It's about God living within us, who gives us the strength, who gives us the power to conquer whatever is put in front of us. It's all about him. It's all about Jesus. It's all about him. And I'm so glad it's not about whatever courage I muster up within myself, because I'd be in trouble if that was it. But it's all about Jesus. And hearing these stories of God at work in the world, it gives us a clearer vision of who he is. And it gives us a bigger vision of who he is. And it makes us believe that he is worth it, because he is. He's so worth it. I've had the privilege of traveling quite a bit with my work, and I've seen a lot of suffering, and I've seen a lot of God's people suffering. But instead of making me wonder how worthwhile it really all is, it just makes me more convinced that Jesus is worth it. Because if all these people are enduring all of that and they still believe he's worth it, then they can't all be wrong. Surely they can't all be wrong. He is irresistible. He is so worth it. And God is always in the habit of transforming situations. I remember seeing a quote on, it was probably on Instagram or something like that, but I really liked it. It said, God is always up to about 10,000 things. You might be aware of three of them. God is always up to more. And I've seen him draw all kinds of people into his love, into his kingdom. You know, ex-terrorists, leaders in prominent positions, commanders of entire armies, because his love always goes further and his love extends to everyone. And why would these people leave their lives where they thought they'd made it to follow Jesus if he wasn't worth it? If he wasn't better? If he wasn't better than what they'd known before? He is irresistible. And the cost is great. But what we get, Jesus himself, is so much greater. He's so much more worth it. And I don't know how much time we have. I think I may have gone a little bit over the time. But he is so... I just want to finish there. And we've got to... I think we may have... If anyone's got any questions, please come and find me at the end. Or we'll be on the stand all week. Got some lovely ladies at the front here sporting these T-shirts with me who'll be around on site as well. Please do ask us any questions. But I'd love to just close in prayer, if I can.